Mahalia, welcome to the Center for Indigenous Midwifery's podcast. Our mission is strengthening community by honoring, supporting, and reclaiming Indigenous midwifery care and culturally centered family support. For more information on our programming, visit indigenous-midwifery.org, find us on social media, or tune in for a live Zoom cast offered each month. Thank you so much for listening.
Thank you very much for allowing me to be here and for Marisa to introduce me to you. I'm excited to be here. So my name is Stephanie Durande Rodriguez, and I also have, you know, pregnancy loss stories that I've experienced. And one of my, you know, passions that I've dived into is to become a full spectrum reproductive coach, emotional healer, and currently going into student midwife to become a midwife. And so there's so much things that I love, but one of the things that I really like to bring awareness is on pregnancy and infant loss, just because I've had my own stories and, you know, just experienced a lot of loss and grief. And when I'm me coming to this space is to share my experience, and also sharing my process and how I'm reconnecting to my culture, which, you know, at the beginning, I got really turned off of my culture just because me experiencing how my family was handling grief or anything that will call me Mexican or Native or Indigenous, that later on I realized that wasn't truly the culture. It was very colonized and very Catholic and Christian oriented, and you know, and it's okay to believe in those religions and that belief. It's not that it's wrong, it's just it didn't fit right for me at that situation. And so being a mom of six children from 18 to 4, and that's not including two of my miscarriages, my loss. So I would have had 8, you know, if I kept the course like this, but has realized that I would suppress grief, you know, didn't know how to truly process. And one of my longest grief before pregnancy and infant loss was the death of my mom. I just didn't know how to process it, nor did I feel it. And we tend to feel numb. And so experience, like talking about my situation, it was just feeling numb and not having cessation, not doing ceremonies, not going to the grave, or even trying not to remember the day of certain events of loss, just because it was hard and it was sad and it was depressing. And so by that journey, my first loss was 2013, and I was 24 years old, and I already had 2 children at that time and gave hospital births. And I'm so lucky, everything I know now, that I feel it went as smooth as possible in a hospital birth. And so by losing that baby, I was pregnant. I was having a doctor appointments. It was 12 weeks. And I was having like a stressful moment where within that argument that I was having raising my siblings, because when my mother already passed away, and we're having this huge conflict. After the conflict, after I sit down, I was always intuitive of my body. Like I always knew my body was always speaking to me and telling me what's going on. So I had that intuition. And when that was happening, I just remember feeling my stomach, or, you know, where my womb is, and telling my spouse, who is my husband now, but was my boyfriend then, I was like, something's wrong. I don't feel that pressure. I don't feel that bubble that you normally would feel that I have, you know, a baby with a soul, you know, or something like that, right? And I know I had 2 weeks before my prenatal. And he's like, no, everything should be fine. You're just, you know, you're stressed out. You should calm down and, you know, decompress and just wait for your appointment. So I listened to him. A week passes and I'm just like, no, there's something wrong. Like, I know there's something wrong. And I just felt it. And that's when I called my doctor and I said, hey, I think, you know, my baby's dead. So I need a checkup. And, you know, normally they, you know, we, as a professional, you just don't want to be like, oh, really? Maybe you're right. You know, they always try to calm me down. Like, well, let's see. Maybe it's not. Let's see what's going on. So I'm there. They're doing an ultrasound. And the doctor's like, okay, well, let me get someone else to double check. It's a specialist. And I was like, a specialist? Okay. And I was by myself. My spouse was at work. And it's crazy that every time I experience a loss, I'm normally by myself. And so we were there and trying to figure out what's going on. Here comes the specialist. And then the doctor comes. He leaves the room and the doctor comes, my OBGYN, and says, yeah, we can't find a heartbeat. It was sad. I cried. You know, calling my spouse, letting them know this is what's going on. He comes and it was sad. And, you know, he's just like, okay, well, you got to go to the hospital and register because tomorrow we're going to, you know, operate you. And, you know, and being in a situation, no matter who experienced loss, especially in pregnancy, it feels, you know, like you're just, I don't know, I felt. Let me talk about myself, right? Like, I felt like you're just walking through this. Like I felt like disconnected. And I'm just doing things, but not really there, like focus. So maybe some people do experience that. And so they're telling me they're going to operate you. And things that I know now, since I started diving into pregnancy and infant loss, is crazy how there was no resource. There was no, like, you could do this, you could do that. Here's your option. How do you feel? Let's help you digest it. It was just mostly he telling me, you got to go do this. We're going to operate you. This is weird. Your body hasn't bled or cramped up or, you know, expelled the baby out. And it was just like, no. So it feels like, wow, didn't my body knew it should have, like, released or something? So yeah, it was scary. It was nervousing. And we went and remember coming out of it and feeling super sore through my throat. I just remember, well, before that, even going on the day of, you know, they're like going to like the operating room and it looked pretty scary. It's like super cold and not colorful and having all these people there. And not really talking to you super thoroughly, nor did I ever thought of like, hey, what are you doing? What's going on? Didn't ask anything. And just remember they injected something. It was extremely painful. That was like, oh, what the hell? Like, this hurts. And it just knocked me out, you know? And so then I wake up and I'm in the recovery. Like I started to perceive someone near me and I opened my eyes and I just remember seeing something dark, like not really understanding what it is. And I started swinging. Then the nurse was like, hey, calm down, you're in recovery. And so I was like, oh, okay. Like, we're done. That was crazy. They take me to like the recovery room, another room, right? And just being sore in the throat, not able to speak. Swallowing hurts, feeling sore, and it was just weird. So didn't really process so much. You know, the only time I processed was crying, like for a little bit, maybe in less than 3 minutes or something, in the OBGYN doctor office, and continued, you know. Maybe I like sheared some tears to tell my stepdad and I don't remember who else, like, yeah, I lost a baby. Can you go pick up my other kids? And And yeah, it was just weird. And so I still think I'm still processing that because I still haven't had the time to process that, because just sharing that story right now with you guys is a little hard for me. So I'm just gonna take some time right now, right here, put my hands on my heart. You guys could do that, or whatever feels comfortable. Have your eyes closed or have your eyes opened, whatever feels safe for you, and just take like 5 deep breaths into the abdominal area, just to allow this to process, because it was pretty hard for me. Or I feel like have that holding space for myself there, because, and thank you for letting me share that and allowing me to hold that space for myself. And so, yeah, it's just, I think it was so easy to put many issues in my life, even childhood and growing up, into this box, you know, like save these emotions for later, because I have other children. Not only am I taking my 2 children already, you know, birth, I'm also taking care of the time my sister and my other sister. So I already had like 4 kids at the moment that I was taking care of. And so it was more like, I just gotta like continue life. And didn't do any ceremonies, didn't do any church thing, nothing, just continue with life. So that happened, right? So I was a little bit numb and suppressive in that. Then my second story, which I feel more comfortable sharing because I feel I have processed it, which I felt was more traumatic for me. And it was at 2016. I was 27 years old. And right now I'm 33, so you can have that timeline. And that one's a little bit traumatic. It was traumatic, and I felt guilty at the time because I already had, already had 5 kids at the time. And one of my sisters, the middle sister, wasn't live with me, so I had 5, a sister, my son, my daughter, and 2 daughters. And so when I got pregnant, I wasn't ready to be a mom again, you know? And I felt guilty for being so upset and miserable because I felt I was like being depressed, and I was irritated with the world, and I was super overweight at the time, just because I already had so many kids and I already felt like a lot. And then knowing that I was pregnant was like, gosh, this is horrible. Like, what the hell? Why did I allow myself, or why did I know enough or to prevent it or whatever? And, you know, negative thoughts have happened where I was like, what if I just have a miscarriage or something? And then I'm like, oh no, that's horrible. That's like, why would I think like that? I'm like, Stephanie, why would you think like that? It's like so ugly to think about when there's other families who want babies, and then you're over here having babies like nothing, and you're so ungrateful. So I always carried that guilt for the longest time because I was like, man, I'm so horrible person. And I think those thoughts are normal. Especially when you're, you know, I think Satya, she's now 6 years old. At a time when I got pregnant, she was only 3 months. So I was still very early postpartum. So I do believe I was going through this really tough postpartum. And normally we sometimes go into these dark circles and dark hole where we think very negative things. And what if I could just escape? What if I just maybe abandon my children? And they're not something nice, because we're put this like idea of what's a good mom, what's a good person. We got to fit in this box. We got to do this checklist. We have to be on top of our house, be on top of our children. And if we don't do that, we're just bad. We're horrible, right? And sometimes having like the families around you, the family members are not the best people to be in. Like, that's how I felt. I couldn't reach out to Art's family. That's my husband, or my family. And so sometimes you like suffer alone in this darkness. And so yeah, this is like intense stuff, and it's okay to cry. It's okay to process. And even though you still process and you're constantly always releasing, you know, you're always going to feel certain things. And so, yeah, so it goes on. I'm probably going to hit like 13 weeks. And then I started having like cramping and a little bleeding. And so I was like, okay, maybe I should take some raspberry leaves, because I happened to one of my pregnancies, which is Lydia, who's 7 years old, and nothing, everything was fine. And I remember it was like already late of the day, and I was like, no, telling my husband, because he's my husband at the time, if I wake up and I'm still cramping, then I'll go to like the not the ER, but like the urgent care. And he's like, okay, sure. So I wake up, I know I have these little babies, the other kids are going to school, still feeling cramping. And I was like, man, I'm feeling cramping. There was no bleeding, but I was feeling like a little crampy. And by that time, was with Lydia and Satya, I had home births, like I experienced home birth. So it was just like, okay, this is getting a little strong. And so I called Art's mom and says, can you take care of the babies while I go to the emergency? Cause I kind of feel like something's up. And she said, sure. And I don't think she knew I was pregnant, cause I wasn't sharing. Cause it was like until 3 months. By past 3 months, I'm gonna tell the whole world. So it was only me and Art who knew. He's at work and I'm telling him like, I'm having cramping, I'm pregnant and I'm not feeling good. And so they take me in, they put you where like the, I always forget the triage, there you go. They put me in the triage area. They're checking everything. They're like, okay, here's the wheelchair. When the wheelchair, I stand up to sit there, I felt something fall like on my underwear. And I was just like, oh my God, I think something just fell, like maybe it's my baby, you know? And they're like, okay, we'll sit down, let's take you to a room. So I didn't really want to sit on it. So I'm like leaning and they're rolling me to the room. And then they take me there and they put some pads on the floor and I start removing my clothes and I see like a pouch. And so I started busting, crying, like, it's my baby. The nurse comes in. And I just remember, like, she's like, and I understand, you know, like, you have to put the gloves. And she doesn't know any of my history. So they have to be precautious, which is totally fine. I get it. But it also felt like, oh, something foreign and gotta be very careful. So it wasn't, like, very loving for me. Even though she was being nice. And she was trying to be careful and caring, but it didn't perceive caring, you know? I would have loved more nourishing at the time. And so she was like, oh, well, put it in the bag or here, you know, like, and I just grabbed my baby, like, this is not, you know, poop or something, you know, like in my head, like, this is my baby. So I'm going to put it nicely in the bag or something. And so I'm crying. Then she's cleaning the blood on my legs and everything. And she's, you know, I don't even remember what I was wearing. Like, I just remember she was cleaning. I don't know if I still had my pants or what, or I'm sitting on the bed or something. I just don't remember that detail. And I called my husband and he rushed from work again. And so, yeah, I was like a little bit traumatic because I saw the pouch that I feel was more traumatic. And so like in this one, I don't feel like I want to cry so much because I've processed it so I could share it. And that's what I feel. But again, my story could be very heavy sharing and other people might perceive it very heavy. So, but when I know I was in the hospital, I knew a little bit more because I was already knowing about home birth, already did home births, and I was already kind of getting into the whole world of holistic care. And I tried to fight for my baby. I was like my baby. They said no. I said, I have my rights. I want my baby. They said no, because you gotta test them to see if it's actually a baby, if it's not tumor. And I was just like, what the heck are you telling me? Like, I know it's my baby. But I didn't have the strength to fight too hard. And so I dropped it. And my husband didn't fight either, you know? He was more concerned of how I am. And so I left it. And so I always had that, like, why didn't I just give my baby? Like, I'm so upset. So I wish I had my baby because I think I would have done more a ceremony or something, you know? But since I was denied that, and I didn't know who to reach out or what to do. It was just like, okay, because I was very emotional. I left it to be. And so that's why I think another reason why I went more in depth in to become a doula for pregnancy and infant loss, to create those resources and to know what to do and understand the rules and everything I know now in the state of Texas. It's so vague that you have the right to get your baby, you know? You just have to show them a plan so they could feel safe, the hospitals. So yeah, so again, I'm gonna put my hand on my heart, close my eyes. You guys are welcome to do the same or do something that feels comfortable for you and take deep breaths, 5 deep breaths into your diaphragm. Thank you for allowing me to take a moment here and just like analyzing what I experienced prior to the first story and this one. I was more shaky in the first one and I could feel a lot of energy within my body. So I think that was helpful to do that. Okay. And so now, where I'm at now, you know, I've gone into more about knowing about racism and knowing about, you know, the systems and how, you know, there's things that get colonized and to uncolonize stuff, even like health and hormones and that, just like the whole overall women's health. I started like diving into more of my history and, you know, asking around on my family member. So knowing that I am Mexican from my dad's side and Spaniard from my dad's mom's side. So I knew that a long time ago. So I was like, okay, I'm Mexican. I'm Hispanic. Okay. And the beginning of this talk, I said how I got turned off from being Mexican because, you know, we were Catholic and just the way people acted within Catholic and my dad's Christian, the way like the pressure and the way that they just, you know, come to me to be a certain way. It was just very not welcoming and I just didn't like it. So it wasn't for me. And And so, yeah, so I got turned off. And so, and I knew I was Native American or Indigenous because my mom told me one time, like, yeah, I believe we are Apache. And her dad, he's from Tiguas. And here in El Paso, there's Isleta, all Tiguas. And I was like, oh, interesting. But at a time, it never, like, got me super intrigued. Because in my mom's side, it was never so much spoken of or talk about rituals. Was never, you know, really talked about it. Not either, I mean, we were Catholic, but my mom was Catholic and she wasn't really a Catholic, like in-depth Catholic. We were not always going to church. So we were just not into any religion. Yeah, we'll do baptism, but I think it was more for parties. And she just, my mom just loved parties and stuff. And so, yeah, so that's pretty much what it was. And that's it. And so after my mom passed away, I got like this knowledge, you know, I felt like I was poured this like ancestry knowledge because my mom was like a very psyche, very medium person. She's able to like perceive people's pain and we could be driving and she'll be like, that lady is suffering. She carries her pain so she could feel a lot. And I tried to understand her, but I never really truly understand her until she passed away. And all the questions I used to ask her about this like energy perceiving and seeing things that you can't see with these eyes, it just like fell on me. It just felt like something was taken away. And I understood everything. I was just, I don't know how to explain it, but it's just really weird. So I became very intuitive, like more in depth and feeling people and perceiving and knowing, like if I knew behind the lines, you know, of certain situations, which was awesome and overwhelming. So knowing how to have that balance. And so that's when I say, you know what? I don't think I want to be Catholic nor Christian. It's just very turned off. So I think I'm going to go back to, like, I'm going to go and dive into my Indigenous. And when I started to decide to do that, I had a friend who introduced me to the Hare Krishnas. So I said, okay, sure, because I was getting into, like, the holistic stuff. And yeah, I got into the holistic stuff and I got introduced to that, to the Hare Krishnas. Went to the first gathering. I loved it. I loved it because they're talking about freedom of choice. You know, they talk about love and acceptance. You know, I really dig the whole, you're not this body, you're this soul. So I loved that. I loved also that, you know, we don't really die. We just, you know, move to another body or to reincarnate. So that's when the first time that death wasn't scary. It wasn't, you go to hell or you go to heaven, you know? You do this, you gotta fit this line or you gotta fit this box or you get punished for eternity, you know? So I love that. I love that there was like, options. There's like, it's not that simple, you know? And so, yeah, I love that. Sorry guys, give me 1 second. I thought I had this connected. Okay. So I love that. I thought that was amazing. It wasn't dark. You just gotta wear black. It wasn't where you don't speak about the death, you know, and you especially don't speak on the death with children. You wanna protect them. It's all silent, it's dark, it's sadness, and you have no fun. And the Krishna conscious is like, no, you embrace it. You pray, but you pray with chanting and with music and community, and you help them to move on to a better life. You know, where they're going to reborn or they're going to go back to God, Godhead. So I got so into it, and I've been, you know, involved in that movement for like 13 years, almost 13 years. And so this year, I really have dived into reconnecting to my culture. And so that's where I got into again, like, what is the true meaning of death in being a Mexican, you know? And that's when I started learning about more about the Dia de Muertes, which I knew, but I never like give it importance. And it was really nice knowing how it actually comes from Aztecas and the Mayans, and how they've been doing this for many years and traditions, and it has a backstory. And it's about, you know, remembering your family members, honoring them, talking about them, celebrating color, just color. Like if you see how we dress in Dia de los Muertes, it's just colorful and beautiful, and we're celebrating. It's not dark and scary. So I did it 1 year, and it was nice to have all my ancestors. It was nice to put an ofrenda, an altar for my mom and my grandma. You know, I put my other, you know, like great grandma, everyone, but I think them too are like, it was really special for me. I even cried and I was like, wow, this is, I think, processing. And so I gave myself that moment to process those griefs that I haven't processed for 5 to 13 years, because they all, my mom passed away at 38 years old, and my grandma like barely turned to 60. So they died really young. And I think one of the reasons that they passed away is because of trauma of violence. And so really trying to work and cut those cords of my ancestry violence has been really important for this lifetime. And so, you know, just honoring Dia de los Muertes is nice. You know, like you're just remembering, doing things that they like, celebrating their life. And so that was nice to know that that's what Dia de Muertes is like, just honoring and celebrating versus, you know, it's just sad and dark. And so if you're like me, who's interested to reconnect with your culture as a Mexican from Mexico, you know, Dia de los Muertes is one. Another one is Dia de los Todos de los Santos. And that one is a mixture of a lot of cultures, where in Spain, they also believe, because they're Catholic, them and Christian oriented from there, what came and migrated over here in Mexico and in the US. And this is where a lot of like colonizing and take away people's belief. But one of the things that was accepted and still allowed was Dia de los Santos, because Guatemala also believed in Dia de los Santos. But even like Dia de los Muertes, like all that was accepted just because it was close to similar in Catholicism. And so this is where a lot of like Mexicans are now incorporating being Catholic. And so I think that's where it was a little bit more tolerable, that ritual, that belief from indigenous were not taken away, because it matched a little bit to the Spaniards and the Europeans. And so when you go to Guatemala, they celebrate it every time, and they do kites, and they have different stories around that. On the kites, it could be like remembering and supporting women's rights and protecting children. And it's also related to honoring the death. Now in Catholicism and like in Spain and Europeans, it was more into like, this is what the Bible says. And it's more whoever got baptism, they're saints, right? Or who's following the rules of God are saints. And so that's where they kind of mush it. And also in Guatemala, they have like this huge festival, and they get together. It's like a whole community, and they have like these huge, like huge feats of paper, china paper, where they put art of their traditions, and they have a beautiful contest and they're celebrating and flying kites as remembering their family members. So again, that's something similar. I wish I was like, oh, kind of similar, like Hare Krishna, colorful, celebrating, being community and remembering and allowing the soul to pass. And so, you know, you're using like fire, they're using candles, fire, using music, using flowers, food, water, using all these different elements. And so, and then I started diving more into like indigenous, right? So since I haven't been able to connect with Apaches or too much Diguas yet, I'm still like in deeper discovery in there to connect to some tribes, to learn more about them. But everything I've learned so far, it's as ceremony. So I do some indigenous inspired ceremonies where, you know, they use sage to allow the soul to continue passing on, to go back to the creator. And something I thought was beautiful was like when a child is born, normally elderly, you know, of the community are observant, like, what is special, what's going on at the time of birth? What is more, like what pops up in their mind or their eyes? What do they pop up and see in their surrounding? And this is where some natives have got their name, you know, because it could be like a deer passing or, you know, the eagle or something, a smell, something happens so significant that that's where they get their name. And so it got me to think like, maybe I'm not able to do something. I didn't do anything at the time of my loss, but I could still, you know, do remembrance and honor them right now by, you know, saging my room or my house or the area that I want to give this like ceremony to my babies that passed away. And chant and do music, because so does natives. They do music and chanting and drums and, you know, doing fire and, you know, friends that are from Navajo, they will do fire for 4 days. And then in the old times, they used to get together to help the passing of the death, you know, until like, you know, tremendous diseases will pass and they get scared. And so that's like the fear of being around death was scary. But before, it will be also like ceremony and community, like all these little cultures that I'm experienced, Dia de los Muertos, Krishna consciousness, Dia de todos los Santos, indigenous, right? So it's all about community. And so, you know, still honoring. And this is where like intuition that I feel intuition comes. Like we do know, what we need to do for our baby and to honor our baby's death. And we do know what we do need to help us process. And so by putting a candle, doing a music, writing a song, putting flowers, decorate, celebrating the time of a story that they help us to, what they brought into our awareness at the moment. And you can even do something where when you're setting that environment, what perceives you, what becomes significant, where it could be memorable and you honor your baby, right? Because another thing what I really loved about connecting with my friends who are indigenous is, you know, you just got to hear the whispers of your ancestors, but you can't ask too hard, because if you're too focused on wanting the answers, then you don't hear it, you know? So knowing how to surrender and come into this peace of groundiness and allowing the answers flow. And that reminds me when my mom died, knowing this knowledge of I don't know, you want to call it psyche or you know, a healer, I don't know. But it just felt like I just knew this, like, information that was like, wow, this is like my mom was carrying, and it felt like it was passed on to her, and now was passed on to me. And it's kind of like that when you're just trying to honor that process of grief, and it could be your pregnancy, your infant, or any loved one. You could do that, and honoring and doing love and celebrating that, and knowing what and understanding what you need, you know. And sometimes when you feel like you don't need it or you don't know what you need, being in that moment of not knowing, because sometimes that pause, sometimes we just need that pause to declutter and let something shift. But that is pretty much my journey right now of, you know, reconnecting to my culture and understanding where I come from, and also accepting everything I've learned in the Hare Krishna, and how it's not, for me, it's not, I'm this only or I'm that. I feel like since everything got so mixed up from, you know, everyone coming to these lands, that, you know, just knowing how to embrace it. And I feel like I become sometimes like a leaf in a river just flowing where the waves are just taking me, and it's okay to flow without having a plan. But that's pretty much like what I think I wanted to share. And I think this is a perfect time to open up to anyone who would like to share or ask anything.
Thank you, Stephanie. I wanted to also just remind anyone who came in after the beginning that this time can be for questions, and this time can also be for sharing personal stories. And if at any point you would like your words or your story to be edited out of this recording, that is completely fine. And we will absolutely honor that. And so, yeah, I definitely have some thoughts and questions. But first, if you want to just do the little hand raise thing, then I'd love for anyone on this call to have that space. Okay, sometimes it can be hard to get the conversation going, but, you know, I welcome it and I invite it. Stephanie, I just had some specific questions. You know, you talk about being a grief trauma coach. If someone were to just be, like, maybe it was someone that you were a doula for, how do you feel like, because I think that, you know, I titled this, you know, One Mother's Story, just because the way that we do all grieve is so incredibly different. You know, some of us need, you know, public stories. Some of us are needing to, you know, very much grieve in private. And also that there's so many layers to this. And as you shared with your first story, there's you're just so distracted or busy by needing to tend to the medical care or arrange for your other children or, you know, the doctor's appointments and the pieces like that. I just want to circle back that if someone was coming to you for the first time, and maybe you don't, let's, you know, have this be where you don't have a prior relationship to them. You know, how do you begin, you know, supporting them as a grief trauma coach through loss and helping them to create the ceremonies that will be unique for each of them?
You know, I've had situations where someone was calling me like, I'm having a miscarriage and I want you here. Can you come here? And I go and hold space and go with them and be with them and just know that they always have the right to say yes or no to things. And so it just really like, Also, you could have all these books and you could learn about grief and trauma. And again, every time you get into the moment, it always feels like new. It feels like you're a newbie. And it just really depends. It really depends where they're at. So just hearing them out, what they need, and knowing that, you know, there's no right or wrong way. And then you have to also consider, like, you can't always talk about God or talk about a certain religion, because then you have to know their culture and understanding their culture and what they need. But just knowing how to hold space is pretty much listening to them and being comfortable with the uncomfortable, because we're also taught, like, you know, you want to share something like, oh, how are you? And some people don't even know how they are. Or some people are like, yeah, I'm fine, or it's okay. Or they're worried about not making you feel weird. So if they say something like, it just hurts, and you're just like, yeah, I agree, this is painful. This is, it could be heavy. Tell me more about that. What hurts? Where does it feel heavy? And just asking them where they could feel comfortable to be like, oh, you're actually interested to know, you know, and be there. And, you know, you could have them a blanket. You know, sometimes some people love that feeling like they're being held, having a tea, being like, whenever you feel ready, here's some tea. And, you know, just sitting in the quiet, sometimes just sitting there in the quiet for them until they feel like they want to open up a little bit. Because, you know, there's always like 12 steps for healing trauma, or, you know, like, and, you know, it's not always that way. So every time they share something, listening to them, repeat what they're saying in a way that don't sound like you're a robot, and even ask more questions on what they're saying. So if they quickly pass something that feels heavy or hurt, you want to ask, like, oh, I hear that you're saying this, you know, this hurts or this feels heavy. Where does it feel heavy? Tell me more about that. You know, and then they might open up more and discuss about that. And if it feels extremely heavy what they're sharing, you know, you could just hold space and walk in them if they would like to deep breath, like, whoa, this was heavy, and thank you for sharing. And if you feel welcome, I would love us to take like 5 deep breaths, because then that's also helping energetically to allow that feeling that we just felt, that vibration, to continue shifting versus we hold it, because then that's where it becomes block emotions. And then so many things could happen when block emotions, and then it's a certain frequency that has to go somewhere, because energy can't be destroyed or created. And that's where, like, you know, you have these overlay of different frequency with similar frequency with the organs, and creates, you know, disruption. And so that's where I feel that is the best way where I hold space for someone who reaches out to me. It's just, you know, being where they're at.
Yeah, and I think something you said just made me think of that sometimes it can be helpful to just, for these situations, especially when there is so much changing dynamically with the physical, you know, that like, where does it feel heavy? And sometimes, you know, people very much know, like, I feel it in my chest, you know, or I can't take a deep breath. And that then, you know, you can just help support that. Like, is it that somebody needs to just yell to have something leave? You know, is it, you know, that they need to put their body in water and, you know, help themselves to go soft? You know, there's so many, and that changes. And, you know, sometimes we don't have it so clearly in the physical, and that can be alarming too. To just, your body has healed, your body has moved on, but your heart is still feeling the heaviness that has been there. And so, yeah, it's such a unique and dynamic and ever-changing and ongoing, working with people who have had losses and then, you know, when they are conceiving again, or on dates, you know, when it is their, you know, the due date they would have had, or the day that, you know, they began miscarrying or something like that, just having those sort of, you know, remembrances that sometimes there's this next layer of needing to honor that loss. And I also loved the vulnerability you shared, Stephanie, and in talking about, you know, that we can have different guilt, like that you didn't want to have that a pregnancy at that time, and how we can really carry complicated feelings, you know, of not feeling ready or just feeling overwhelmed or, you know, having second thoughts, or all of those things are so normal. And if we have those and they move through and we continue with the pregnancy, it's a different experience as if we feel those things. And then, you know, our baby is no longer with us. You know, we can feel so many different things. And everybody has such a unique spirituality in this way, you know. You know, I'll just share that I constantly am just feeling like I bring in this feeling that there are no, that our babies choose us, and they choose when to come, and that can also be even, you know, whether those babies leave early because of a miscarriage, or, you know, we say goodbye to them and, you know, they are no longer part of our story because of a choosing to terminate. Regardless of those reasons, I believe that we're in a relationship with those spirits. And that's brought comfort to some people and comfort and not to others, you know, that our babies choose when or how, and that we don't always get to understand the reasons for it. And it's often doesn't have to do with our life or how much money is in our bank account. It's things that are so beyond, you know, actually making earthly choices. It's about something so beyond us. And so having these, inviting in these ceremonies unique to each person, you know, some people it is a saying goodbye. You know, some people it is a goodbye for now, but I really hope that you'll come back to me. And, you know, that there's different words that people will find in those ceremonies. And we cited several different ways. And, you know, I'd love to just open up. And if anyone has, you know, stories to share. There was a question on whether I was planning to stop the recording. I certainly can. But my preference just for the flow of things is to just say to the camera that you would like it edited out, and we will absolutely honor that. But just because it goes to the cloud and things like that, it's a little bit simpler. But at this point, is it Anawa? If you would like to share, and then I have Jacqueline's iPhone after that.
Hi, my name's Adora. I just have my name like Anawa. My last name is Naugishik. I'm from Kashkizogging First Nation, which is located north of Thunder Bay in Ontario. I currently reside in Bawating, which is also known as Sault Ste. Marie. It's at the top of the Mitt of Michigan, but on the Canadian side. I just want to thank you, Stephanie, for sharing your knowledge and your experiences with me. This is a conversation that I've been wanting to have for so long, and was really, really excited to see that it was being offered. my first pregnancy was a miscarriage. And I was pretty young. Well, I was like 20 years old, but I was also young in the mind, where like I didn't really know a lot about birth, pregnancy, motherhood, really anything at all. I miscarried by myself in the States. I'm Canadian, so I don't have healthcare in the States. So when I miscarried, it was in the middle of the night. I think I was about between 12 and 14 weeks pregnant. And I went through an entire like laboring process by myself while I miscarried my daughter. And, or not my daughter. Why did I say that? when I miscarried the baby that I had named the baby Nakoma. And my ex-partner at the time, he was sleeping, and he almost seemed sort of annoyed with my pain when I was going through it. And I didn't know, it wasn't like FaceTiming and video chatting and that type of thing wasn't really popular then. And I didn't have anyone to talk to help me through it. I was like in and out of the bathtub, on the toilet, in and out. Like I was just kind of delirious. And the experience itself was very traumatic and heartbreaking. And I think I still, sorry, I'm gonna cry. I think I still carry guilt for that, because I miscarried when I finally like birthed the baby. I was sitting on the toilet and I didn't know what to do. So I kind of freaked out. I flushed the toilet. Like it's the worst thing I could have ever did, but I was scared and I didn't know what was happening. And I felt very like that was a human life, and I just like let it go. But that grief didn't come until afterwards, like way afterwards, because I was too in shock to really know what was happening at the time. And when I did go to the hospital, they're like, yeah, you miscarried and you probably will feel like for the next couple days while everything is coming out, continuing to come out. The second part to that was that before I even could fully process my miscarriage, I was already pregnant again. And I think if you think about that, I got pregnant a month after my miscarriage, and how soon that is for a womb to be pregnant again. Like, I could not fathom like what my young self was like feeling or experiencing. There was a lot of grief throughout my pregnancy. There was a lot of sadness. And also just not knowing my boundaries as a woman to give myself that space to grieve and to say, no, like I need my time. It was just a total disregard for me as a person and my experience. But when I went back later in life to kind of acknowledge what I had experienced, I kind of went to the water. I put a bundle out. Lake Superior has always been a source of prayer, a source of renewal, a source of connection to me. So I went to Lake Superior. I put my bundle out for my baby. And then I also did like a sacred fire in my yard for the baby as well. Just because I felt a lot of grief about having birthed a baby in a bathroom in the middle of the night. Like it was very, I didn't feel like it was the total sacredness that comes with birth. And yeah, so this space is really needed, because I see that there is a gap for miscarriage or abortion moms. In our communities, it's not something that people really talk about. It's something like, oh, I've had a miscarriage. And it's always like, oh, like, you know, there's no conversation. There's no, like, there's no space for it in our communities. And I feel like that is something that needs to change, because it's more common. And then like myself, like 9 years later, I still, carry that with me. Like I still cry when I think about it. So there's women out there who have those experiences locked in their bodies because they haven't had the opportunity to talk about it. So thank you for allowing me to speak. And I know that was a lot I just dumped on you, and miigwech, and thank you for this space.
Thank you so much. And you're right. I think that we don't often know the pain or what to expect, and that's an area of you know, Stephanie as a full spectrum doula, and just of teaching our people about what these physical experiences are. You know, what, even whether it is because they're not even sexually active yet, but just, you know, talking about this, you know, talking about that miscarriage does actually happen pretty commonly. And then also just to prepare people after they know that this is starting to happen for what they can expect. It can be surprisingly painful, and it can be extraordinarily intense emotionally and physically. And a lot of people don't have that side-by-side support from a full-spectrum doula or family member or healthcare provider or anyone. To help coach and guide them through this really intense physical experience. So thank you for sharing. Stephanie, did you want to add anything to that? And then the next person, Jacqueline's iPhone, if you wanted to go.
Absolutely. I mean, I definitely don't believe it's like, you know, like I say, like we kind of feel like, oh, sorry, I just threw this at you. And I think this is like why it's important to have these kind of spaces where it's like, yes, please share. And it's not throwing, it's more like, thank you. This is very brave to share, especially when we're sharing and, you know, energy starts flowing and we get like nervous. Like I had like this huge like rush of energy of like, oh my gosh, this is a lot that I'm, you know, relieving. And every time we think about those moments, like we are remembering the feeling of that memory. And it's okay. So that's just saying your body, like there's more to work on, and you know, there's more things you could do of ceremonying and honoring that time. And there's so many things you could do, like, you know, water, writing a letter, you know, imagining, rewriting the story of like how would I've loved to be nurtured at the time. And it's okay to feel scary. And we sometimes just react because so in shocking, like, oh my God, what is this? And we didn't have the guidance of like, this is normal, this is okay. And your body just reacted because that's what it needed to do to protect you, you know, because maybe it was too much at the moment. And honoring how your body protects you and go, well, thank you very much for protecting me this time. And I appreciate you are, you know, I just reacted because maybe that I did need it that, but you know, it's never too late to honor your baby, even though, you know, it went maybe that pathway. And, you know, just really, you know, honor that time and, you know, knowing like I would have done this. Like, for example, one of the reasons how I believe I processed my second birth was because I had that huge guilt. And I said, and I remember I was talking to a friend, it was like a birth story. And I shared, I was like, what came up on me because she didn't exercise. And like what came out was this guilt I had on my baby for not wanting my baby, and went into a negative thought mindset. However, if the baby would have survived and was alive, I was telling my baby, even though I did not want it to at the time, because I was overwhelmed with everything in my life at the moment, and you would have been here, I would have still loved you. I would have protected you, and I would have done anything like I do to my other children. Because it wasn't you, it was how I was feeling at the moment. And I loved you and I love you. And that really helped me to shift that guilt feeling, to be in peace with that. And so that really helped me at that moment.
Thank you so much. Jacqueline?
Hey, everybody. Greetings. My name is Jacqueline Bedeen. I am Danae. I'm originally from Fort Nelson First Nations up in northern British Columbia. And I currently reside down here in Otham Territory in Phoenix. I really, really enjoyed your share, Stephanie. I just appreciate the candor and the honesty that you, just how you expressed yourself, and just trying to find other ways to honor yourself and your experience and stuff like that. And I've had two pregnancy losses, both very, like when I was young. The first time I was 15, and I had a lot of the similar thoughts that you did, Adora. I was like, sorry, maybe I apologize, I'm getting people's stories mixed up, but not fully understanding what it meant to be pregnant, making really, you know, unwise decisions and having guilt over it, like still drinking, like as a teenager, stuff like that, thinking that it was just going to go away, hoping that it was just going to go away, things like that. And eventually found out that it was a molar pregnancy. And so I didn't understand what that meant at the time. And eventually my body started to pass it, and similar where, like, you know, I started with cramping and spotting and eventually passed something while I was on the toilet. And I remember just being super doubled over in pain and had my, you know, I had to get someone to come get me, and they took me to the hospital and they had performed a DNC and stuff like that. And I didn't tell anybody. Like my friends knew, my boyfriend knew, but I didn't want to tell my mom. I was scared to tell my mom. I was living with my sister at the time. She knew because she had to take me to the hospital. And so I told her, but it was like super traumatic how they found my mom and told my mom, because I was 15 and the doctors wanted my parents' consent to perform a DNC. They had to track her down. And so like a police car stopped her on the highway. It was just like, sounds really dramatic, but she had a nursing background. She knew what that procedure was and stuff. And when she came to see me in the hospital, she was understandably upset and mad. And I remember she told me, like, I'll never accept a grandchild from you. And I'm feeling emotional about it. And I've talked about this a lot and stuff, but it that stuck with me for a really long time. And, you know, within the year, all kinds of things happened. I ran away. I was like on the street. I was still with that same boyfriend. I ended up pregnant again. And I don't know what the health of that pregnancy was, but I know that I was in a really bad spot. I was using drugs daily and things like that. And it started to happen again. I started cramping and stuff again, and I knew what was happening. And I had found out a couple of weeks earlier that I was pregnant by like going to like one of these like street clinics. And so when it happened, we got a ride to the hospital and stuff like that. And again, you know, they had a DNC and stuff, and they didn't have to call my parents that time, but I remember being in the hospital and calling my mom and letting her know, like, hey, I'm in the hospital. And she didn't even really have to ask. She's like, are you having a miscarriage? I said, yes. And so like those two experiences like rocked my world for such a long time. Like I would have nightmares and stuff of like, this is super graphic, but like seeing little tiny body parts in the toilet, like hands and feet in the toilet and stuff. And like, I never realized, I was like, damn, I had like post-traumatic stress over this. I was like having nightmares of this stuff. And it took me a really long time. So the thought of getting pregnant was like, was super scary to me. And I like made a pact with myself that I was never going to have kids. And I was like, nope, I'm going to be like Auntie Shirley and I'm never having kids, you know, and it, cause it was always so scary to me because of what my mom had said to me. And she apologized and stuff, you know, later. And I understand that she was just really upset, but those experiences, not even just themselves, but how people reacted to me in those experiences and some of the things people said to me were really, really hurtful. But I just really appreciate like your honesty and like because those are like the, like sometimes like the details that really stick to us, and that, you know, we don't want, like, we're afraid to tell people or things like that, because it's like, oh my god, they're gonna think I'm crazy, or maybe I am going crazy and stuff. So I appreciate both of your stories and your honesty and your candor, because it also helps me to hear these things, because of my own experience, like, I want other women to feel supported and to be able to have someone to talk to, and they can be as raw as they want to be, and it's okay. So yeah, I appreciate you guys for your time and your space to allowing me to share, and just for like offering this up, Rhonda, to have a place to share our story. So thank you very much. I'll see.
Definitely. Thank you for sharing. Yeah, especially when how people react, it's hard. Especially, I mean, I could remember certain things my mom, my grandma would say, and with certain pregnancies, I got pregnant as a teen with my two kids. And if I had a miscarriage at the time, I think it would have been more traumatic because of things my grandma would say. And I know she loves me, right? But I feel, again, it's that pressure where we are put as a being born in a woman's body is, you know, this is the right way, this is the wrong way, you shouldn't do this. And then those pressure and those traumas from other people pass down, and it passed down to you. And it's unfortunately this cycle sometimes, you know, keeps going, and it's never late to honor, you know, and really process and do that stuff. Like when Marisa was here in El Paso, I was telling how my husband wanted to like do this really cute thing to honor my mom's death. And that day I was like, I'm not gonna remember that. I don't want to think about it. And I was a little upset. I was like, why are you doing this? You know, like, you're not talking to me. And she's like, well, isn't what you're discovering, like, you know, ceremonies? And I'm like, yeah, that's true. And that's where I started thinking also that later that day when I was upset. And sometimes it is nice to have someone when, you know, you're asking if you want to do this, having someone to like really help you to nourish you, like what really nourishes you or makes you feel like you're taken care of, and walk you through that time of those process, you know, like of releasing and able to give yourself time. And every time it comes up, giving that attention and awareness, because it's kind of like your body telling you like, okay, I think I'm ready to release this, or I already hold this, it's time to let go, you know, and having that communication with your body too. But thank you very much for sharing. I could relate and how people react is just very hurtful. And so thank you very much for sharing.
Would anyone else like to share or ask a question? Okay. Any closing thoughts, Stephanie?
I just think it's really nice that you guys give yourself the time to be here, to be in this, you know, brave, you know, space. And I think it's normal to feel many emotions, and I don't think there's no perfect way or there's a linear manner. And every birth story, if it's loss or giving birth, they're all unique, and it always changes, and it could be even in a way that as more you dive into of celebrating, like my vision, like if I ever have a pregnancy loss, it would be sad, but I will start thinking as a way of celebrating and how to honor, you know, my baby. As when someone is older, we are learning how to like do like Dia de Muertes, or like in the Hare Krishna movement, or even indigenous, how like they prepare and they do fire and they, you know, love and do this beauty, because it's taught that death is not punishment. Death is, you know, you're moving on to another pathway of your life where it could bring more peace and joy. And so that has created peace to me of knowing that, of everything I'm discovering, which can be helpful to whoever feels that's comfortable, you know? So, but thank you very much for allowing me to be here.
Thank you. And, you know, I think that, you know, you shared about how, you know, these experiences were, they were guides, they were teachers to you. They were, they pulled you towards, you know, wanting to seek out cultural traditions and ways of honoring. And I think these doorways do that, you know, these doorways are our teachers in so many ways. So for anyone on the who watches this replay in the future or anything like that, I want to just echo Stephanie that your experience and what it is physically and how it is emotionally and how it is from year to year and moment to moment is you get to have that. You know, you get to just walk through it, let it teach you, let it, you know, be this guide for you to connect to the cultures, you know, of your lineage. And if that feels challenging to you or is not bringing you comfort, that you find those ways to just bring in the pieces that are offering you healing, whether that is people and ceremony or, you know, unique special prayers or ways that you nurture your body, that creating a ceremony around you, you know, to listen to what you need, and that you deserve to ask for support during these times. I think that's another thing, is just normalizing that, you know, this is not just another day, another month. It is a major, you know, life moment that needs to be honored. And more and more people are speaking up about their stories and sharing that. And I think that's wonderful. We're getting more and more connected to the fact that, you know, it has not served us to live in this colonized way of detaching, you know, from the death is a part of life. And so more and more people are choosing that. And so I want to just close with that. I want to acknowledge that I will be removing the portion of the video that is requested. And if the other person who shared would like to do so, please just let us know. And I want to thank you again, Stephanie. Any last thoughts, anyone? All right, thank you again for joining us. And yes, have a wonderful day. Thank you so much.